Hello, everybody. This is Benjamin Phillips from the Rising Phoenix Foundation with a very special Your Spiritual Broadcast. I've decided to do this special Your Spiritual Broadcast due to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic that we all are very well aware of, and the resulting challenges that we've all faced and are facing. Businesses are struggling, some are collapsing, there's people facing health concerns as a result, there's social unrest that's coming up, and needless to say, the mental anxiety that we all face seeing what's going on globally. And for that reason, I decided to call on David, who's teacher, mage, author of numerous books on the subject of sacred wisdom, occult wisdom. And I wanted to speak to David today about how he copes with and how he handles this situation in his own life. And maybe we can glean some advice from him about how we can ourselves cope in these times better, and how the sacred, what sacred wisdom there is for us to take away from this. So, David, thank you very much for joining me. Again, it's always a pleasure. And so, yes, let's dive right in. Coping with this global crisis. As individuals, what can we do to safeguard our well-being?
Well, hi, Benjamin. It's good to see you and hear you, albeit under challenging times.
Indeed.
So, I'm happy to be part of this because I think it's so important. People are suffering so much. So about what can we do to safeguard, I think it's important to realize that it's always been an important element of magic has been to do with dealing with the troubles of life, particularly with matters that concern us, helping and protecting us. And primarily, of course, creating the right conditions that we need to thrive, shelter, food, resources, and protection. Now, among the powers that be, who are called upon by magic, there are certain beings who do specialize in these specific areas of human life. The ones I've just mentioned, resources, protection, finance, etc. But we need to be able to give our listeners magical methods that anyone can safely use. I mean, I could sit here and talk for a long time about the spirits of the 72 divine names and things, but it takes a lot of training before you can
Right. Yeah.
So, as you know, my first book, which you helped with, was all about safe, simple magic that people could do. So I'll be referring to that just so that it's within people's reach. They
right.
can actually do it.
Uh-huh.
There's no point talking about the techniques of high magic in this particular context, I don't think. I think that wouldn't be helpful to our listeners. And so I think we should discuss the specific problems and then look at what they can do about it should they wish. Do you agree to that as a way forward?
Yeah, I think that's I think that sets the tone nicely. It's practical and it's something that we can do day to day, which is even people still in shelter, it's still a matter of very big importance. So let's then kick off with, as you mentioned earlier, protection. In these times, there's social unrest and there's an element of criminal activity that is obviously on the increase in certain places. Could you talk a little bit about what we can do then as a result of that to protect ourselves and our homes?
Yes. In this, the angel, the sacred power known for dealing with these, in fact, he has the title of the great protective angel. You'll have to forgive me, of course. Angels don't really have gender, but I mean, just to be quick, I'm going to say he. It somehow sounds a bit impolite. But the angel Samael, the great protective angel, who is also associated with the planet Mars, and Mars and the ancient wisdom is the seat of vigor and strength. In its dark side, it's seen as having a warlike capacity.
Right.
In the same way that some people train in the martial arts, not to then go out and be aggressors, but to be protective and as a discipline.
Mm.
So Samael of Mars is the all-round protector. So he can defend our homes, the buildings we live in. What people don't realize, perhaps, is most thieves, I mean, the majority of thieves, are opportunists. They get quite finely tuned. They go around and they somehow pick up, oh, that house looks vulnerable, or that window's open, or whatever. And so most protective magic around houses is simply, it puts up a force field, and it just makes that suggestion to the minds of strangers of, oh, this isn't a wise place to risk it with.
Right.
It deflects their adverse attention.
Hmm.
And then also protection, I mean, he's the protective angel for all kinds of things. So for travel. So he can be invoked to call upon to protect more journeys.
Uh-huh.
And also from the pandemic itself. In the sacred ways, diseases, particularly ones like coronavirus, are seen as enemies who are trying to invade the body.
Okay.
And so Samael can be called upon to protect us from diseases which are which can, you know, come into our system and deal with our immunity. So for defending the home, there's the shield of the warrior angel in Sacred Magic of the Angels. I can give numbers, but I'm not sure if that's any interest. Well, it's page 143.
Great. Just in case. If you've got a copy handy, that's what you do.
All the instructions of, you know, you need white paper, red pen, and a red candle, and what days to do it on. And it tells you how to do it.
Yeah.
And once that's done, that shielding is put into place, and it stays there. And I have known now hundreds and hundreds of people whose homes have been protected by the shield of the protective angel.
Hmm.
And it's really, I have to say, really, the powers that be are far better insurance policies than what you can buy, you know, on the market. And also one can do a special talismans or letters of petition, as they're sometimes called, like say you're going to go on a long journey and it's concerns about it and things. You can do that in advance.
Right. Okay.
And so Samael is the perfect
primary
guard.
Got it. Okay. So, and I think you've touched on the COVID coronavirus. So understandably, there's, with this pandemic going around, most people, I think, would be fair to say that they're concerned about their health. And after all, no one wants to contract any sort of virus, and needless to say, a virus that seems to be quite nasty in its how it affects people.
Yes.
What would you suggest is the correct avenue to address this, besides the protective angel? What other alternatives is a person to reach for?
Well, I would recommend that if a person hasn't contracted coronavirus, they may well wish to invoke Angel Samael to protect them from it.
Right.
But sometimes the, you know, horse has bolted. And so we have, you know, the great sacred power known in Western tradition as Raphael, who is sometimes called the healing hand of the divine. And Raphael is the healing spirit par excellence. In fact, he's the head of all the healing angels, of the hosts and things.
Okay.
And he can be a tremendous help. I've known cases of people who've had illnesses for a long time and doctors have despaired. And they petitioned Raphael and suddenly the correct doctor at the correct time came. And, you know, I mean, Raphael doesn't just take your diseases away from you, though those that don't have any physical means of being healed, he will do that.
Right.
But also the powers work with those people who've dedicated their lives to the service of others. So dentists, nurses, doctors, first line people, it will often inspire them to make the right decision or be there at the right time. But Raphael is also a very fast. His results are extremely fast. So if somebody, you know, has been diagnosed, and not just coronavirus, it was, you know, many, many other things. As I say, he's the healing angel par excellence. So
right.
It isn't really any disease that he can't be addressed.
Called upon.
Exactly. Exactly. So also, he's in charge of communication. And sometimes with these problems, you know, I mean, I tried some offices recently, or I phoned the British Library or something for a book and things. And not only are they closed, the staff aren't there, but the answer phones are full up. Because it takes so long. Anyway,
there's only that much space, I guess.
So Raphael is the great communicator. He's often associated with birds because of this speed. Mm. And so again, if you're having trouble getting any sense out of local government or whatever, you know, bureaucrats in particular, Raphael likes to bounce around the block.
Help them a little bit.
I don't think I should have said that. But anyway.
You don't in a matter of speaking.
Serious all the time.
Yeah. Okay. So have you got a page handy where we can look up working with Raphael?
Well, Raphael, you don't need to worry about with a talisman. We'll simply go with the letters of petition, okay, which are chapter 5, by their signs you shall know them, which begins on page 93.
Okay, great. Page 93. Got a note of that. Right, so let's move on. So I think the next point that you made earlier at the start of the call, income, resources. So, you know, there are many businesses and shops being forced to stay closed at this stage. Some people have been laid off and have lost their work or their permanent work. And needless to say, some people are no longer receiving any sort of salary. So how do we deal with income or money? You know, who do we call upon in this situation?
Well, this is going to sound strange when I say it's not that difficult, providing you know the do's and don'ts.
Okay.
So first and foremost, I'm going to just deal with the sacred celestial being, which is Angel Satchiel of Jupiter. And he rules income and monetary movements and all those things. In particular, I'm very pleased because what I would strongly recommend to people is there's a talisman on page, 148. Uh-huh. It's called the Golden Square of Bounty. It's very easy to do. I mean, as you know, but perhaps in case somebody has never seen the book, you know, angelic magic is very easy. It's usually about copying the diagrams in colored ink on the appropriate day to the appropriate angel. Mm.
And all of that is explained in the text.
Yes, it's like an ABC.
Right. Know?
As I often say, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So this one, 148, is the Golden Square of Bounty. Mm-hmm. And that's specifically for people who don't have a fixed income. So in the old days, of course, or before this happened, it would be people who were working on commission or things like that. But of course, nowadays, there are many people who used to be on fixed salaries who are either
Oh,
now
no longer.
out or we have furlough here. I don't know if you have that there. It's where the government part pays a percentage of the salary. And others who've just lost their jobs, like in America, I mean, thousands of people have just lost their
Scary.
jobs right now. So that one, the Golden Square Bounty, is perfect because it deals with need. You see, one of the things which stirs the activity of the higher powers is need, not want. And people often confuse the two. Need. And of course, this is why it's perfect for dealing with this. So on this question of finances of money, I'm afraid this is where the ordinary muggle way of thinking, sensible in its way, does not apply in magical work, which is simply the fact that one would think, well, I need X amount for my monthly bills and things, and then one thinks, well, I should be wise. I should get a bit more so I have a nest egg in case something goes wrong. Well, that never works with the powers. And that's why the petitions, the requests are always asked to earn the money to meet all the needs, all of one's needs. And don't worry about that word earn. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to throw you out on a job on the streets or whatever. Earn means doing your part, and then, which is a different thing. And then you get a call out of the blue, like somebody who's heard about the work you do, like, oh, would you be willing to do this or something or whatever?
So what you're saying is, just to maybe clarify that, you're also saying that it's not just that you ask and you all of a sudden just gold falls out of the sky. It is that one puts one's own back into something.
You make yourself available.
Yes, right.
You don't sit there and waiting,
There's not the secret going like, okay, I'm gonna just visualize a car painted in gold to turn up at my doorstep. It's you're actually gonna have to go, and if you want that's what you have to work for.
very upset when a kid runs up to you and gives you a little gold car model.
Yeah, that could be a bit disappointing.
I think one of the problems with this kind of thing is, and I mean, when I talk about it lightheartedly, it's something that all of us have been through this phase, which is we get fixated on how something is going to come to us. So we think like, oh, a dating site's going to come up with a perfect person, and or this is going to happen or that's going to happen. In other words, it's as if we're sitting in a room and we're saying to ourselves, right, so the perfect amount of money with some extras going to come through the front door. And I'm going to sit here in the chair and I'm going to look and I'm going to wait. It's going to come through. Still knowing that the universe is trying to give it to you through the skylight that's open behind you.
So what you're saying is by being so fixated on how you are essentially, I think you've even said this a number of times to me in private, you end up limiting how it can get to you. And so if you set your intention to just be one way, you are, and by virtue of petitioning in that sort of limited point of view, you end up just saying, okay, well, it must only be like this, and it must be only happen on a Tuesday, and it must only be after 12 when I'm home to get it. And now you've just basically made the opportunity so much less likely to happen.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that one needs to try and develop a 360 degree vision. Because most of us are human and still on our way to Buddhahood, but at least go for a 180 degree vision, rather than
Well,
wide.
and as you say, I think just follow the instruction in that, ask for to have the need met and not specify how the need must be met.
No, I mean that's why if people are in a hard time. And I've been there myself and I've done this, so I'm not talking about something that I haven't tried and tested myself. But I mean, it's saying like sometimes once a month I would have to do invoke for to earn enough finances for all my needs to be met. And then as soon as that happens, and you'd be surprised how generous upstairs is, because they actually know your needs better than you do yourself and things. Yeah. I always remember, because you'll know this, Benjamin, because one of the signs of Raphael is to find some money on the ground, or to pick some up, or even a foreign coin in one's change. Well, I always remember a student of mine. We had gone to the supermarket in the days when you could walk next to people in supermarkets, and when she got her change, she suddenly had this big yippee and kind of jumped off the ground, and I looked, and everybody else looked. And she said, a foreign coin, because she had petitioned Angel Satchiel, and this was one of the omens to say he was going to help her. Now, of course, most people finding foreign change in their coin don't automatically jump up and thank God. And far from it, they usually turn on the poor cashier and give them
Why
a
are
nickel.
you giving me?
And then another occasion, I was down in the underground of the tube trains, and with another student, and they gone ahead a bit of me and things, and she suddenly stopped, and there, rumpled in the corner, she unfolded, and it was a £20 note, and she was like thrilled, because that's just exactly what she needed at that particular time. And I always remember, because she taught me a lesson, because she turned around and she said, and ever since I've been working with the angels and seen them so often do this in my life, now, if ever a note disappears from my purse or I lose some money, I don't get fazed, because perhaps it's for somebody else. I'm not saying the angels are pickpockets and come around, I'll take some Benjamin and I'll take someone's so. But I mean, it was
That's
just.
good to know.
But it was just, but the attitude, it's an open chat attitude. You see, we're brought up mainly by a Protestant white ethic, which is kind of like, be strict, be good, do all of this, and work hard, and keep your nose to the grindstone, and all this kind of thing. And the newspapers and advertising encourage it, full of numbers and statistics. But what people don't realize is providence, or the will of heaven, or whatever you want to call it, destiny, providence always deals with us as individuals. It doesn't go for collectives. Just because you're of the same age as a couple of million other people, or the same build, or the same whatever, doesn't mean that automatically providence is going to deal with you in the same way. And we know, for example, before the breakout of World War II, many people in esoteric work and things were given warnings to get out of the country from Germany, where they were at the time. And they did. And that was even before the outbreak of war. That's when the Nazis started to imprison anybody interested in esoterica that wasn't their own brand of dark sorcery. So, and because they heard these four warnings, so they were saved. So I know times are challenging, and of course, we naturally become fearful. That's only innate, a natural thing. But consider this, please. Magic isn't about blind faith. It's about a reasonable faith. For example, let's say you decide to train to be an electrician. At first, you have to have faith that the person giving the class knows about the subject. But very soon, after you practice what you've been taught, you see the results. That kettle does now boil when you plug it in. The lights do come off and on when you've made new fuses. And so your reasonable faith has now been replaced by personal knowledge. Knowledge, and there's the saying in magical practice, knowledge is better than faith, and wisdom is best of all. So, I mean, it does no harm. I mean, as I've said, if it's just like some paper and a colour pen and a rule and a pair of scissors, if that's all it costs to experiment for something that could change your life, particularly in a time of crisis.
It's basically what you're saying is just take the leap of faith. I mean, it's not asking you to abandon any other sort of deep-held...
It's just faith with a small F. I remember, 15, 16 years ago, one of my visits to South Africa, and I was doing a weekend thing. And as sometimes happens, somebody asked if they could have a private consultation with me, which we did. And to put a long story, he had owned his own business, married with children, and his business was going down the chute. And he said, you know, I've looked at everything, and then I finally decided in desperation, I'm going to try magic. And I've looked at all the books. And of course, he was looking at, you know, the Goetia, the dark stuff. Mm. He said, you know, I've even got a goat in my backyard ready for the ritual sacrifice and things. Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, having a goat in your back garden in South Africa is no great shakes. He said, I know I'm going to lose my soul for doing this, for turning to the dark powers, but at least I'll have saved my wife and kids.
Oh.
So I had a little talk with him, and I told him about Angel Satchel. And at first, all I'm saying is, you need some white paper and some purple ink, and this is the symbols you use and things. And then within 7 days, if it's going to be granted, these signs will come. See, it's not blind faith. You get the omen. He looked at me as if I was a half-wit, because it was like so simple and so childish. Do you remember? Unless you become as little children, you will not enter the kingdom.
Mm.
You know, it's a childlike, not childish, it's a childlike openness to the hand of heaven. And off he went. And I didn't think I'd ever hear about him ever again. But a few months ago, I got a letter while I was here in London, and he just thanked me for saving his soul, because Satchel did the deal, and they were okay. So,
yeah. No, I think it's, you know, one tends to be, in a modern world, expect things to be very complicated, and also, you know, I guess with all of this sort of thing, the dark magics are just sometimes easier and more on the surface for a lot of people to come across.
And they promise more.
Yeah. And it seems a little bit more sexy, possibly, even, I guess.
And
maybe.
They're not actually lying. They promise more. What they don't tell you is what extra they give.
After. The price. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm.
Yeah. Anyhow. Okay. So let's move on. Can folk call on the sacred powers for other means? I mean, I know we've now covered protection, we've covered money, we've covered health. What else is there that one can tap into through the great white sacred powers?
Well, if I may, just before we go there, I just want to address about, can people call on the angels for other folk? You know, because, you know, you know about this. Can you do it on behalf of another person?
And so, right, yes.
Well, that's the point, you know, because it's a natural donation. But I just have to make people understand quite clearly. Unless they're experienced in this work, then the answer is just a flat no. Because it is important that the person does it themselves, there is a view held that if a person won't get down and do the thing, then they're not ready to reap the benefit of it.
Uh-huh.
But there are exceptions to people who you can do it on behalf of. So these are children, meaning your own children or adopted children.
Uh-huh.
Or if you look after an orphanage, then your children. You can do it for children under the age of 14. Over 14, they're regarded magically as young adults, and they're entitled to more free will. And the other case is if one is caring for an elderly person who no longer has all their mental faculties, you know, they may have some dementia or whatever, then again, one may invoke on that elderly person's behalf.
Right. Okay. Good point. Yeah.
But otherwise, it's an individual to individual thing.
Activity. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, there are other things that one can invoke for with angels because they have all different matters. So, for like if you're in farming, you could do things that will ensure that your flocks are healthy and prosper.
Mm-hmm.
Or Angel Castiel will deal with land and like if the land's in threat of drought or famine. So there's a whole wide range, you know, which we don't have time to go into totally. So.
True, yeah. Okay, so maybe to kind of close this up, I wonder if you can maybe give us some thoughts about the background from your perspective that's maybe caused all of this situation that we're now facing globally. I mean, I know that you've addressed some of the other real social issues that have come up in the most recent letters to your spirit, you know, that just all humankind is precious. But specifically to the COVID conversation, I just thought maybe if you could speak to that a bit and just give our listeners maybe just a different perspective on on where we're at.
You could say it's my opinion or the opinion of those in the same kind of work as I am. I think really it's easier if we remember if we think of a crisis as having the same function as the antibodies which defend us from an infection.
Mm-hmm.
It may sound strange, but the social unrest that we're now seeing, so I'm not just dealing now with the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also dealing with the riots and peaceful protests that's now going over the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Things are not unrelated. It's flagging up all sorts of problems that we as a global society have. So we're being shaken to our social foundations. But what's this about? Well, I think in matters like this, we should always look at what immediately preceded the event. What was going on before the pandemic hit? So I'm just sharing my personal insight on this. If you think back in the years immediately preceding coronavirus, up to months beforehand, we were all being warned about the situation of planet Earth, about climate change, about the devastation of species and the rape of natural resources. Then, as now, many people were making peaceful protests and trying to draw the attention of governments to the issue. And although some things happened, let's be quite honest, although the government said they would do something and made promises, they just really dragged their feet.
Right.
Conferences and things, but nothing deep was being done. And the reason for that is because people in government are usually also, if not themselves, at least related to people who own the big corporations and the businesses, who didn't want to put into place ecological safe things because that would use up more of their precious commodity or their own little god called money. So governments made a few platitudes. They gave people more recyclable refuse containers, which actually do very little. And basically, they weren't doing very much at all. And there was that wonderful girl, I can't, forgive me, I'm great at faces but awful at names. She's from one of the Scandinavian countries, either Norway, Sweden, or Denmark. You know, and she sailed across the Atlantic and she became
the Greta girl, Greta.
Yes, exactly. Mm. You know, and talk about out of the mouths of babes, you know. And she moved many, many people. But still, the governments were being stubborn. But people were But just before this, aroused by the issue of Mother Earth. And also some of the spiritual giants of our time, as well as many magical practitioners, began to invoke the powers that be to help and heal planet Earth. And thousands of other people were also making these efforts, you know, in their prayers and their thoughts. So I'm of the opinion the current epidemic is shattering the rigid shells of society and the economic markets. To be frank, we probably also need to look at that unspeakable subject that no politician is ever going to say, because they'd never get elected back into office. But we need clarity, because we've had this from such great people as Sir David Attenborough, and all the big scientists have said this. That the greatest cause of global devastation is due to the consumption of planetary resources by the human population, which has grown beyond what the planet can support. In all other areas, we are comfortable with thinking that, oh, I have a herd of cattle and I need more to be born, or there's too many, I better cut them back. I should say straight away here, I'm not suggesting for a second that we start culling human beings. What I'm talking about is we control the birth rate. I mean, I don't know how it is in America, where you're talking from at the moment, Benjamin, but even here in Britain, with an NHS and things, there are millions of pounds that go in every year into further research on infertility, when we even need one single more human in the country, you know. And I realize it goes against, you know, a lot of religious views and things, but one has to bear in mind the foundations of most religions is tribal in origin. And in those days, yes, you had as many babies as possible, because the guys would become the warriors and hunters, and the girls would become the mothers, who would make more warriors and hunters, and your tribe would get bigger, so you get more land, and then you could have a kingdom, and then you could have an empire. And then you could, now you can fill your factories with them and send them down the mines and all the rest of it, things. And it's a biological urge that doesn't make it a sacred activity. And like it or not, the human population is too big for the planet. And so we're going to have some creative, intelligent answers, not about killing people or euthanasia, but simply controlling the birth rate. Because it's quite simply, if we don't, I mean, even Attenborough was saying, we will get to a point when the next generation after this one will be like some of the Middle Easterners now, when they escape from Lebanon and Syria, but it will be because there isn't work, there isn't housing, there isn't
anything, resources, yeah.
Anything will, you know, come down. So this is what they're telling us, that this current pandemic will in comparison be just a small event. So I think we must be wise gardeners, wise custodians of the earth, caring for it responsibly and sharing it with other creatures, changing our ways creatively, so that we do not make substances that continue to poison the waters and the air, which in turn then poison the vegetation and the earth. So it's a wake-up call. And think deeply about what can be done. And all of this is good, because if we go down the same route, millions will continue to suffer and become worse and worse and worse. But if we restore the world to being a place of freshness and vitality and of mutual respect and of the thriving of all life, it will be as it once was, a semi-paradise.
Yeah, I think this is definitely, as you say, I think this is a trying time, and it is definitely hopefully an opportunity for people to, for us all to reflect and really think very hard about what has been important to us and what will be important to us going forward.
Indeed, indeed.
But thank you very much, David. I think we're gonna end it there. I think it's a hopefully gives people something to think about and add to their own musings. Just as a last comment, to our listeners, just for your information, David has just finished writing his latest book called Restoring Eden. Want to have a quick comment about what it was all about, David, what people can possibly discover from the latest book?
Well, this came about because a few years ago, when there was this upsurge about ecological matters, excuse me, ecological matters, and because I'd had experience in this particular field, I have the urge, the nudge, to do something about it. So it's called Restoring Eden, but the subtitle makes more sense, which is How to Work with the Spirits of Nature. And so it's about how you can commune with the spirits of the trees and of the plants, how you can heal land that's become devastated and barren, how you can work with the devas, the angels of nature and things. And so that's what it's all about, the elves, the fairies, the gnomes. And also there's quite an extensive little index about fairy. I'm using the word as a collective noun. Fairy throughout the world, because otherwise some people think, oh, it's just a European thing, like but in fact every single culture around the world has had some knowledge of there being spirits of nature. And so you see, I don't want to take your time, but I just want to make a point is a lot of ecological work was kind of also spurred on by fear. Now, I mean, it's wise to be fearful. I mean, if a tiger comes running at you, it's rather wise to be fear because that will kick in your adrenaline and you'll run faster, hopefully faster than the tiger. Now, that's perfectly legitimate. But it's also known psychologically that if somebody does something, they act in a particular way out of a particular emotional drive. That very emotion colours the outcome. And with all respect to a lot of people doing ecological work, and I think they're doing amazing work, but doing the emotional signature was fear. Fear of lack of food, fear that,
Or fear for other people, I
yeah,
guess.
or there wouldn't be fear for their own children and whatever. There's a certain sanity to it, but I mean, I was then thinking about the other side from my teachers who taught me the green way to walk with the spirits. Because when you come to know the spirits of the land, the dryads of the trees, the sylphs of the air, they become, I call them cousins. If I call all human beings my siblings, my brothers and sisters, then the invisible folk and the animal kingdoms are cousins. We're still one great family. And so if you make those connections with them, they're increasingly based upon affection. Now, affection is a very different emotional signature to fear. And so, and also being able to cooperate with them where they can show you what's needed and where.
It becomes a partnership in being cohabitants of this planet, I guess.
Exactly, the great wheel of life. Great wheel of life in which all
Great.
lives are precious.
Wonderful. Well, we don't have a date yet for when it will be available, but we hope it'll be soon. And I'm sure we will try and make a lot of noise about it.
Certainly by the end of the year, before the end of
Oh,
the year.
for sure. Hopefully by no later than fall. Great. Well, David, thank you very much. I hope people got a lot from this. There's a lot of information yet to digest, and hopefully people can tap into the sacred wisdom and also find wisdom, help, and also some inner peace. So I thank you for sharing what you your work again, and also just helping us to understand the details around working with the great angels of magic. So thank you, and have a lovely day.
Well, thank you very much, Benjamin. And if people do want to know more, of course, I think Sacred Magic Angels is available through Amazon, I think, and certainly on the Rising Phoenix Foundation website too. So anyway, thank you for helping us do this. So it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.